Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me from the beautiful state of Hawaii is Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, first of all, I want you to paint a picture of where you are, and then I'm going to tell you where I'm recording this podcast from. So you're in Hawaii, right?
I am in Hawaii. It is beautiful here. It's about 11:30 at night. The stars are out. I can hear the waves lapping against the shore 10 meters from where I'm staying. And I guarantee you it's a lot better than where you are right now.
I kid you not. I've done this podcast in some wonderful places all across America with you on Radio Row at Super Bowls. I am in it's a storeroom. It's nothing. You can't dress it up as anything more than that. I'm surrounded by cardboard boxes. There's like helmets from all the teams. There's a Ryan Tannehill jersey over my shoulder. Lots of mini helmets. It's an 8-foot by 8-foot windowless room. Nick Pike, our producer, has rigged up the telephone so that we can record this podcast. He's deserted the sinking ship, shut the door, and he's put a load of cardboard boxes outside, so I actually can't get out if I tried.
I tell you what, of our thousands and thousands of listeners don't appreciate how dedicated we are to bring this to them every week, then they don't know what it's like to be stuck in a closet with no lights, no oxygen. We have reached a new high. We have reached a new high and low here tonight.
The worst thing is, Jeff, we're 158 into this podcast, and it's actually getting really hot in here already. So they may be carrying me out. I thought you were going to say we've got really professional as well.
It's 72 degrees with a light trade wind blowing in off the ocean right now. So I don't feel sorry for you.
Stop it. All right, let's talk about some of the big news from the NFL. We will get onto our state of the franchise as well. We're going to wrap those up this week with Green Bay, Seattle and New England. And we will take your questions in the mailbag. But, Jeff, we have to start. I've got a makeshift desk next to me with lots of notes on it. We have to start with the news the punishments handed down to the New England Patriots. So the Patriots, for Deflategate, lose a first-round draft pick in 2016, but I guess they're fined $1 million. What's making more of the headlines is the fact that Tom Brady has been suspended for 4 games. Now, first of all, your take on that punishment, which is, I guess, you know, we've never seen that level of punishment thrown at a team, in terms of the money and the draft pick, and Tom Brady, of course, is going to get headlines as well, but since then, the Patriots have issued their own sort of rebuttal. They actually set up their own website to refute the claims in the Ted Wells report. I mean, here we are in the off-season, and NFL is front and center right again.
Well, you know what? We talked about this last week, Neil, and we talked about the fact that the commissioner really has got painted into a box on this one because of his relationship with the owner of the Patriots, because of what is perceived as his lack of firm hand in the Ray Rice issue, because of all of the things that have swirled around with the Hernandez situation. In our opinion, and I know I felt particularly strongly about this, that the commissioner was going to get put in a box and he was going to have to react hard and firm and show that he was in charge. Because, again, when you're dealing with the New England Patriots, you're dealing with the preeminent franchise in the National Football League. And when you're dealing with Tom Brady, you're talking about the preeminent player in the National Football League, really the face of the NFL around the world. And if you don't, if they're in violation of, you know, particularly when you're talking about the fairness of the game, the integrity of the game, if they're in violation in those ways, you have to show your strength. Now, the fact that they fined him $1 million to Mr. Kraft is not like $1 million to you and I or the listeners, right? So we can be clear about that. The draft choices, that stings, but that's going to sting in the future. The thing that's going to hurt them in their immediate present, and this we're talking about next season, is you lose a franchise quarterback for a quarter of your season. You're talking about maybe swaying the balance of power in the AFC East. And we talked about Miami and Buffalo
in an improved AFC
doing East, so much in the offseason to get better. Now you make them even better by taking you know, Brady out of the mix for four games. So it's a significant, significant penalty.
Brady has already appealed his punishment. The Patriots have until May the 21st to appeal theirs. The appeals hearing officer for Brady's punishment is going to be Commissioner Roger Goodell. And I guess the NFL Players Association on one side are going to be up in arms about that, not happy about that. But Jeff, that is perfectly within the NFL's rights and the rules that were negotiated with that players' union. So this is nothing that should come as a surprise to the NFLPA. Did it surprise you that Roger Goodell didn't want to distance himself, or do you think it's right that he takes this appeals hearing?
Well, I think the optics of the situation right now are critical for the commissioner. This is an opportunity for him to get his power back, to get the power that was taken away from him by so many off-season things last year. And, you know, frankly, when you go to the draft and you hear the commissioner booed as he steps to the stage, that's concerning to me for the league. And so I think Mr. Goodell understands that this is now his opportunity to do the right thing, to stand up for the game. And by not bowing out, on the appeal by Tom Brady, I think then he now is putting himself in a position to show that he is strong. Now, will he follow through? That's the next question. Really interesting to me, Neil, was when you heard Lee Steinberg, who was probably the greatest agent of all time, the guy that Jerry Maguire was patterned after in the movie, Show Me the Money, that whole deal, Jerry Maguire. He said about this scenario to Tom Brady, basically an advice to Tom Brady, take your penalty, walk away, and just don't go through the appeal. Because when you do this, you drag yourself and the league and the game through the mud for the entire appeal. Because this is going to be continuous media fodder through this appeal process.
Yeah, and there's talk of Brady, if the appeal doesn't work out, then going to taking this to the courts all the way up to the Supreme Court. So then you're looking at it rumbling on and on. And you know, Jeff, he may not get the result he wants at the end of that. He might, but, you know, he's got basically a whole summer of distraction ahead then.
Yeah, for him and for the football team and for the National Football League. And I think the thing you got to understand about this, Neil, is the longer this thing goes through the appeals process and, you know, conceptually into the court, you know, the court situation, the court system of the United States, all the way up to the Supreme Court, it's just going to create an adversarial position between the greatest player in the game today and the commissioner and the league. Mm. And I just really hope that they're able to come to some sort of, you know, common ground and recognize that it's not, you know, let's be honest. Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks that's ever played the game. He will go down in history as one of those guys. His Hall of Fame status is secured. His legacy in the game is cemented. He doesn't need pride or whatever it is to feel like he has to clear his name. Hey, you made a mistake. Mm. Accept the facts you made a mistake and let's move on with life. I think that's the way I would like to see everybody, you know, handle this situation.
But maybe the team haven't done that, Jeff. I mean, they went to the lengths of, you know, issuing this 20,000 word rebuttal. They set up their own website to do that. And yes, there was some good scientific arguments in that rebuttal, but people stopped listening when they said that the guy was talking about himself losing weight when he called himself the deflator. I mean, some of it was just, you just might have been better off being quiet on that front.
I agree with you 1,000%, Neil. And you know, the things that Gronkowski has come out and said and his, you know, his whole, they can stop that shtick right now if they want to. Mm. But this is obviously a planned attack or a planned counteroffensive back at the league by the Patriots and Mr. Kraft. I just, they don't need to go through this. You know, my grandfather used to say this to me all the time. Don't ever get in a peeing contest with a skunk because it's going to leave everybody smelling bad. And you just, you got to understand that that's not positive for the league. Actually, my grandfather said another word, but I can't use it on radio.
I like the way you toned that down. Well done, Jeff. Listen, we're gonna sort of structure this news based on what I can see around me. So, you know, to my left, hanging on a rail, is a wonderful gold 49ers jacket. To my right is a gold 49ers mini helmet, and their defensive tackle Justin Smith has retired after 14 seasons in the NFL. And I've had the pleasure of sitting down and interviewing Justin Smith. And this quote from his conference call with reporters just about summed him up, Jeff, because he was no nonsense. He told me, I said, what are you going to do when you eventually walk away from the NFL? And he said, I'm going to go and work on my ranch. I just want to be away from the spotlight. So he didn't have a press conference. He had a conference call with reporters. And he said on the phone, you guys ain't going to get me in a room and make me cry. I mean, that's kind of how he played the game, though, Jeff. He was a guy who tied up blockers with incredible strength, and that allowed other people around him to become stars, didn't it?
Absolutely, and I'm going to just give you this little anecdote. 2012, I'm going to San Francisco to see Jimmy Tom Sula and spend a day talking football.
Yep.
And you pull up into the facility. They were just now in the new facility in Santa Clara. The stadium hadn't been built yet, but you pull up into the parking lot, and the guy that the parking attendant, you know, says you can park in the player lot, and you pull into the player lot, and there are the Maseratis and the Benzes and the, you know, the whole deal, right? Everybody's got their thing working, the Escalades, and there's this big pickup truck, right? And in amidst all of those fine cars, amidst all of those, you know, $100,000 automobiles, is a, I think it was a Chevrolet pickup truck. And so I asked the attendant, I said, whose is that? I thought it was somebody who was working in the, you know, in the equipment room or something. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, that's Justin Smith's ride. That tells you all of that. That told me all I needed to know about Justin Smith.
Yeah, so he retires after 14 seasons, split his time between the Bengals and the 49ers evenly. And, Jeff, I guess he really caught our attention when he was in San Francisco, didn't he?
Yeah, no question. And he, you know, it was the perfect storm when he got to San Francisco. He was a working class, lunch bucket, tough ass, really hard nosed, physical, play every down like it was the last down you were ever going to play guy. And in comes Jimmy Tom Sula to coach him. And it was one of those scenarios where very rarely does this happen in professional sport, particularly in professional football. But there was the right guy coaching the right kid, and it was a marriage that was made in heaven. Because if you ever watched Jimmy coach during games and it got bad, where did he go? He went right to Justin,
yeah.
And it got thick real fast. And they could speak the same language without ever opening their mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, your language is much more colorful when we do this podcast in a storeroom. We're peeing with skunks. You're talking about Justin Smith being a hard ass. It's like because we're in the storeroom. People are still here.
Yeah,
you know?
I tell you what. When you want to talk Justin Smith, then we're throwing out the thesaurus and Rogers and all that other stuff. We're talking baseline football. Let's go. Slam them together. Knock them down.
Okay. Next piece of news. In a little Tupperware box down by my feet is a pair of Miami Dolphins socks. Over my right shoulder
You cannot get away from that Miami Dolphins stuff, can you? You've already dropped the fact that there's a Tannehill jersey over your shoulder.
And
there's a Miami Dolphins thing at your feet. I tell you what, you are beautiful.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Ryan Tannehill signed a contract extension with the Dolphins through 2020. There's about $77 million in new money. And we had this question from the mailbag, Jeff, from Gordon Roger. He said, what do you make of the mega Tannehill deal? Was it worth it? I mean, it's a big deal, but I guess it's not that sort of break the bank type deal we've seen other quarterbacks sign. I mean, my personal opinion is I think he's ready to sort of make that step, and I think he will prove to be worth the money. What's your thoughts on the deal?
Well, when you get in these scenarios and you're talking about a guy that's an ascending level player at the most critical position in the National Football League, which is quarterback, you have to try and ensure the fact that that guy is going to stay with your franchise and that you can build your franchise around him. I think of Roethlisberger early in his career, Neil, mm-hmm. when, you know, indications were that he was going to become that ascendant quarterback in the National Football League, but he really hadn't done it yet, all of it, all of the things that you look for. And that's the way I see Tannehill. Now, as they continue to build that franchise and put better players around him, I think that's going to be the key for him. Now, will he win as many Super Bowls as Roethlisberger? I can't tell you that. But I'm just telling you that when you have a guy at that position who has all of the characteristics, has all the attributes, physical, mental, emotional, all of it, leadership-wise, then that's the guy that you have to sink the money into and build your franchise around him.
All right, let's get into our state of the franchise then. And, Jeff, hanging on this rail, you know those sort of classic high school American jackets that they wear? Those, this is a green one with white sleeves. It's got the G of the Green Bay Packers on it. There's one of those hanging. I'll tell you what, I'm going to make out like a bandit when I get out of this room. I'll be taking carrier bags of stuff. They're going to lock me in a storeroom. We might as well get something out of it. So we'll start with the Green Bay Packers. They went 12-4 in 2014. They won the NFC North. We saw them knock off the Dallas Cowboys in the divisional round of the playoffs. And I think with 5 minutes left, when Morgan Burnett intercepted that pass, and I turned to you in the studio and I said, Packers are going to the Super Bowl, Jeff. And they didn't. I mean, that's where everything starts with this team there. In terms of, you know, fascinated to get your take on it from a coach's point of view, there's a mental hurdle that now has to be put behind them. That whole one play and clear, there's a one season and clear mentality that needs to be adopted in Green Bay.
Yeah, and you know what? It's interesting you brought that point up, because that play when Burnett intercepted the ball and he's starting to run it back and he's got nothing but green in front of him except for one white shirt, and it was a big white shirt in front of him that was signaling for him to go down, and it was Julius Peppers. You remember that scene?
Yeah, he could have potentially gone.
Going to go down, and and instead of using time and using clock, and that was Peppers' ticket back to the Super Bowl. And, you know, that's precious land for an NFL player. To get there once is amazing. Get a chance, a second chance to go back and maybe win one would have been an unbelievable moment. But in the tightness of that moment, he made that decision to signal his teammate to go down, and maybe was as big a critical mistake as any of the critical mistakes that the Packers made in the fourth quarter of that game. So I look at the Packers, to me, Neil, and they're a very, very good football team. These are the things that I see about them that make me say, can you get to the next level? First of all, can you get Matthews back outside where he really needs to play?
Yep.
Right? He went inside last year and did a tremendous job inside, but he's not an inside linebacker.
What you get there, Jeff, is you get a guy who's playing a different position, and yes, he's playing it well, but he's not that difference maker that he is on the edge then, is he?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that you put him and Peppers opposite one another, you've got a real problem for offensive coaches to handle. Now, when you move him inside, it's a whole other deal. Now the protections change. Now the way that you are able to block the front changes, and they're not nearly as effective because you can pinch him. When I say pinch him, you can put the center and the guard on him, put the back on the edge, and now you've got a much more solid protection. Where when he's on the edge, you can't put a back on either he or Peppers. Those guys will beat a back every time. So the protections change when he goes inside. Those are the subtle nuances of the game that a lot of times fans don't understand. Well, he's just a football player. He's one of 11 guys on the field. But it doesn't work that way. There's a trickle-down effect to every move that's made. And when you take your best outside player to help inside, because A.J. Hawk, frankly, wasn't getting it done anymore, then you weaken the structure of your defense, because that defense, the 3-4, is built upon two great edge rushers.
And, Jeff, he's actually on the latest depth chart I've got from Green Bay. He's still listed as a middle linebacker at the moment. And part of me wondered, and we expected them to look at linebacker in the draft. They didn't take one until the fourth round, Jake Ryan out of Michigan. Part of me wonders, again, like I agree with what you're saying. I think you stick Clay Matthews on the edge. You let him be that dominant player that he's been on the edge. and you take your lumps at middle linebacker. Okay, you say, well, we're not very good there. But I know he improved their run defense last year when he moved across, but I do think it took away something else from their team. So, you know, if you can't be good in all of the places, then I think you stick your best players in their best positions.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You don't weaken yourself at two positions, right?
Right.
Now, let's talk about Jake Ryan. And you know, interesting about the draft, because I thought they drafted well. They got a safety early, which really is going to help them. But Jake Ryan at Michigan is a good football player. Fourth round, he's a kind of Chris Borland kind of guy to me, Neil.
Yeah.
And if they can get some of that Chris Borland out of him, right, that tough, hard-nosed, Big Ten, stop the run kind of inside linebacker, then they can take Matthews back out where he is so dynamic, and that's out on the edge.
The offense was ranked sixth in the NFL in total yards. They were the first ranked offense in terms of scoring, Jeff. And we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers in a moment. And I guess there's stars across the board here, Jordy Nelson, Eddie Lacy. But I thought they had a significant offseason before free agency even began, in re-signing Brian Bulaga and Randall Cobb and John Kuhn. And then when free agency opened, they didn't spend a single dollar. But that's the way the Packers do things.
That's Teddy Thompson right there.
Mm.
That is Teddy Thompson. Absolutely. You know, again, the guy, everybody talks about Green Bay, and the first name you talk about is Aaron Rodgers, rightly so, because he is probably the best quarterback in the league right now.
Yep.
But the consistency through all of these years in Green Bay has been Ted Thompson, the general manager. Now, here's Teddy. He's a kid that plays at SMU, goes to Houston as, I think he was either drafted really late or a free agent, made it at Houston with the Oilers as a special teams guy, got into the front office when he finished playing, and what he's done there. Now, remember, if you can go back a few years, and sometimes it's hard for us to do this, but think back to the criticism that he took when he moved Brett Favre on.
Oh, that's a massive,
I mean, he was
a massive decision.
He was, oh, it's huge, and that's what great leaders do, is they have that strength to make hard decisions. Because Ted had to know, when he was telling Brett it was time to go, that was going to be incredibly unpopular with Chiefshead Nation.
Yeah.
But the reality of it was, he had a young quarterback that needed to play, and he has been making those kinds of tough, hard decisions, and more often than not, they're the right decisions, and that's the biggest reason. And that's not to take anything away from Mike McCarthy or any of the players in Green Bay, but it's Teddy that really, really guides that ship.
Green Bay, well, with all these three teams, Jeff, that we've got left, Green Bay, Seattle, and New England, they've found their answer at quarterback. And if you think back to the start of this State of the Franchise series, every team we were doing at the start had question marks at that quarterback position. It does show how important the position is. Aaron Rodgers showed what he could do on one leg in the playoffs. You've just mentioned he's probably the best quarterback in the NFL. So, I mean, there's still some areas that they want to improve on defense. But as long as they've got Aaron Rodgers, is this a Super Bowl contender for you?
I don't think so. As long as he can stay healthy with Cobb and all those weapons that they have offensively, they're going to score points. As you mentioned, getting Bulaga signed was a huge thing for them.
Mm.
And, you know, I think that the thing that really strikes me about the Packer organization is they're not afraid, as we talked about, to make tough decisions, but they're also not afraid to listen to their players. Because right away, once the season was over, what was the one thing that Aaron Rodgers asked for? Give me back Cobb.
Give me out.
Right?
And he's not afraid to go and openly campaign for his guys, is he? Which is what you want.
And exactly. And that shows, what does that say to you? Again, if you're an outside guy looking in, what does that tell you about the organization? That they're willing to listen. That guy is fit. And Aaron Rodgers isn't a pop-off guy. You know, he's not a guy that's just going to talk just to talk.
Mm.
When he makes that public, you know, makes that public plea, if you will, for a player, that means that he feels comfortable to speak out. And that's, again, to me, those are signs of a positive organization.
Nick Pike's finally just poked his head through the window and given me the thumbs up. He's, you know, we're 24 minutes in, and he's finally taken the time to see if I'm all right in here. Jeff, let's move on. I'm glancing over my right shoulder and I can see in the distance there Seattle. It's not that distant, actually. Seattle Seahawks. A Seattle Seahawks cap, of course, the Seahawks in the Super Bowl last year. They went 12-4. They won the NFC West. We saw them beat the Carolina Panthers. We saw them beat Green Bay to get to the Super Bowl. And then they were one handoff to Marshawn Lynch away from winning it all again. So there's been some grumblings in Seattle after the you know, the decision to throw down near the goal line that resulted in the Malcolm Butler interception. So this team's got some psychological things that it's got to overcome, hasn't it?
Well, you know, remember now when we were in Phoenix and that play happened, mm-hmm. and as we sat there off air at the end of the broadcast and talked about how much work Pete was going to have to do immediately after the game in the locker room and then continuing on after the game to mend that locker room, because there obviously was tremendous discontent with the fact that they didn't give the ball to Marshawn Lynch. It was voiced by a number of players in the tunnel. Mm. And then there was also the comments of the offensive coordinator about the fact that the receiver didn't go really after the ball when he got criticism for the play call and all of that stuff that swirls around. And when you're under the microscope in the world's biggest game, everything that goes wrong is amplified. Now, what Pete's had to do in this offseason is mend fences, and that's what he's best at. That is what he does maybe better than anything else, is he's a people guy, and you can bet he's put those skills into overtime this offseason. Additionally, Neil, what was incredibly interesting to me is you're going to draft 31st in the draft. Mm. Now, it was a good draft, but it wasn't a draft that was 31 deep with great players, right? So what did they do? They traded away their Pro Bowl center and their first-round draft choice for whom? For the best tight end, pass-catching tight end in the NFL mm-hmm. today.
Yep.
And so even though they say they have no first-round draft choice, when you look at that Jimmy Graham trade as their first-round draft choice, you say, man, that's a pretty good draft choice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I thought about this as I was preparing for today's podcast, Jeff. I guess Max Unger will be a big miss. There is a lot, you know, they're probably one of the best centers in the NFL now. And but we saw so much last year of Russell Wilson rolling out and getting away from that pressure up the middle anyway, because there was pressure from, you know, the two guards either side anyway. So there's been that interior pressure. So you're not, you know, you've got a quarterback who can withstand that kind of pressure up the middle. And tell us, with this being a team that's so strong in terms of its rushing attack, now when you add Jimmy Graham to the mix, because we know they're not complete at wide receiver, when you add Jimmy Graham to the mix, from an X's and O's point of view, this can transform this offense, can't it?
Yeah, it can. And you know what? The thing that I think you were kind of alluding to there is you say, okay, it's all about adds and subtractions, yeah. Right? So you subtract a Pro Bowl center, but you add the best tight end in football in terms of what you can do with him. Multiple positions he can play outside, can play in the slot. He's not a great inline blocker, let's not kid ourselves. But the fact of the matter is, he can line up there and he can be effective. He can be effective out of the backfield in H-back situations. All those things he can do. It's easier to find, Neil, a center than it is to find a tight end who can do all the things that Jimmy Graham can do. Now, again, I'm a Max Unger fan. That's well documented. He's yep. a Hawaii kid. I love the guy. We talk to him every time we go to the Super Bowl and he's there. But the reality of the situation is you can mitigate the center. But when you've got a weapon outside like he is, big, long, fast, great hands. And then let's look at Seattle's offense. And I think you really documented this out when we talked a couple weeks ago, just you and I on the phone, about Seattle's biggest challenge offensively wasn't the vertical passing game. It was their ability to score touchdowns in the red zone.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that's what Jimmy Graham gives you, isn't it, Jeff? That
Oh, absolutely, and that's why I say I think you hit that one right on the head when we talked about that. Was Jimmy Graham now creates those jump ball scenarios in the end zone that you didn't have, and you know Wilson, the other young tight end out of Rice, I really like him too. Same kind of guy, long, lean, can do a lot of things for you. So I think that is a really, really good trade for the Seahawks.
Jeff, there was a slight delay then. It's not actually a delay on the line. It was, I think I passed out from lack of oxygen, but I've opened the door for a second. I'm wafting a bit of air in. I wanted to talk to you about Pete Carroll. You just mentioned there that he, you know, he builds bridges. And part of me thinks this is what he has to do with this organization, because this is another team that does things a certain way. So John Schneider, I'm not saying he plays hardball with his players, but you know, we know that Marshawn Lynch wasn't happy with his contract for a while. We know that Russell Wilson is still seeking this new deal. Bruce Irvin is not happy with what's been offered, and the team didn't pick up his option. These are all things because John Schneider has a structure and he doesn't want to change certain ways that this franchise operates, and who can argue with him? They've reached the last two Super Bowls. But then it's on the coach, isn't it, to be the good guy in the locker room.
Well, you know what? When it's really good, then you have a situation where the GM and the head coach are in lockstep with one another, and they can play that good cop, bad cop routine as they need to. Now, in New England, it's a little bit different because Belichick is the, you know, potentate. He's the good cop and the bad cop in one. But in most scenarios, it's the GM and the head coach. And, you know, it's not like Pete's the good guy all the time. You know, they share that. But I think what's really interesting about the Seahawks is they have created, and you know, I talked to Maurice Kelly, who played for me and is now the director of player development there. They have created an environment in Seattle where this is really hard to do, where the players have a voice. The players have the ability to say what they feel. And you talked about Bruce Irvin, and you talked about, you know, the quarterback and, you know, Michael Bennett. And, you know, I mean, they're always in the media, you know. So Richard Sherman's talking about this and that. But they can shut all that stuff out when it comes down to doing business. Now, it took them about, what, 5 or 6 games last year to get kind of on the same page. But I think that's, again, that's Pete's greatest skill as a coach, is his ability to be a people guy and to, you know, basically, you know, manage the players, manage the personalities, manage the egos. Neil, how many interviews have you done in the National Football League, would you say?
Oh, hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds.
All right. Yeah. So you have a unique insight into the locker room. You have a unique insight into the psyche of the athlete. You know maybe better than anybody just how difficult that is to fit all of those egos into one room underneath the salary cap and get them to pull in one direction.
And I think it might get worse when you get better, Jeff, as a team. Because I think
No question. Hey, you are exactly right. The better you get, the more guys want. The more it becomes about them. The more their agents are telling them, you're not getting what you deserve. The more their wives are reading about the other guy on the team that's got a bigger contract than them. Mm. And so she's telling him, well, you're not getting enough money. It's all part of that process. And we're in that same process, you know, in health. We've been to the championship game 2 years in a row and haven't won it yet. But you know what? We have to constantly negotiate the fact that the players who've been on our football team say, well, I'm the reason we went to the... Well, it doesn't work that way. It's all of us together.
Yeah.
But that's a difficult... That's a slippery slope to work.
Let's talk about a couple of specifics on the offense and then a couple on defense. So, you know, we talked a little bit about Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson, I think, is, you know, he's extremely dedicated. He's going to drive himself on and try and get to a third successive Super Bowl. Jeff, Marshawn Lynch, they keep talking about, well, this will be the year that he splits his carries and this will be the year that somebody eats into his workload. It doesn't even look like it's going to happen yet. I mean, this is still the emotional leader of this team, isn't he?
Well, the time that somebody walks over to the bench and opens up that box of Skittles and takes a handful and downs them, that's when I'll say it's time for him to step aside. Because until somebody puts their hand in his Skittles box, ain't nobody sharing carries with that cat.
Receiver's good enough for you? Because I know that I answered a question in the NFL UK mailbag a couple of weeks ago saying, are the Seahawks set at receiver now they've found Chris Matthews? And I think we've got to be careful on that, haven't we? Because it was, yes, it was the Super Bowl and it was, you know, it's the biggest stage, so you should take encouragement from that. But it was also just one game. You know, they do still, I think, perhaps need something else at receiver. I mean, I know they got Tyler Lockett, didn't they, in the third round of the draft.
And that's a good pick. Now, let me tell you this about Chris Matthews, because Chris Matthews is a guy who had to get to the NFL through the CFL. In 2012, I'm the defensive coordinator of Montreal, and Chris Matthews single-handedly kept them in a game by doing what he did in a game against us. And we were a much better football team, mm-hmm. but he kept them in the game by doing what he did in that big game, in the Super Bowl. He's a long, tall, big guy who can track the ball well. He goes high to get the football. He gives the quarterback an awful lot of leeway in terms of accuracy because he's got such great catching range. But the thing he doesn't have, and this is what I think is, if there's an Achilles heel in Seattle, is where's the vertical guy? Yeah. Where is the guy that can punch it over the top? And that's what, if they can find one of those guys, if they can establish one of those guys, and I think Matthews is going to help them. I think Jimmy Graham's going to be a huge addition. I think Wilson's an ascending player, you know, at tight end. But do they have a guy who can just run past people? Mm.
I have three points on defense, Jeff. I think Brandon Mebane coming back will help that run defense. I think having Bobby Wagner for a whole season would of course be a difference. You saw what it was like when he came back in the second half of the season. And then what do you make of the secondary? Because they've all gone into surgery this offseason, and Byron Maxwell is now in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the secondary, frankly, to be honest with you. There's been, you know, as always is the case in the NFL, when you have such a dominant position group, well, you can't pay them all. You just can't do it. Mm. And so they had to make some decisions about where they were going to go with their money, and obviously Richard Sherman was the place on the outside that they had to go, and so Maxwell's going to leave, and, you know, they've lost numerous corners in the last couple of years. It's hard to replace those guys, Neil. Mm. So I just don't see how there's not going to be somewhat of a step back on the outside and maybe some adjustments that they're going to have to make with the new players that they have. Because, you know, the Seattle defense that Gus Bradley coordinated and the Seattle defense that Dan Quinn coordinated, that's not going to be the defense that's on the field this fall. So they're going to have to work. Now, interestingly enough, the new defensive coordinator for the first time is a secondary guy. So he's probably more in tune with the back end than those other guys were. But to me, if there's defensively, when you look at the Seahawks, is the question will be, how good is that secondary?
Jeff, are Green Bay and Seattle your top two teams in the NFC?
Yeah, I think you got to go that way until somebody else shows me different right now. I mean, you know, you look at it and you say that they're both got outstanding quarterbacking. They both got, you know, strong running games. They both got, you know, threats outside that can help them. I think, you know, defensively they're a little bit different, that, you know, they're both in kind of a state of flux, but yet both have some dynamic players. I worry a little bit about the Packers' young safeties, you know, how fast they're going to be able to. Certainly Seattle safeties, you know, they got it. I mean, those are two of the best in the game. And then, you know, again, it's going to be who can stay healthy, who can get hot, and who's going to get the home field advantage. Because if you got to go through Green Bay, it's tough to win. And if you got to go through Seattle, it's tough to win.
Would you have one ranked above the other in your preseason power rankings?
Yeah, you know what? If you really pushed me to give you who's going to be on the top of the heap at the end and going to have home field advantage, I think it's going to be Seattle, and I'm going to say only because I think that San Francisco has really fallen off this year, and that, you know, that was a really, that was really a tough game for Seattle each time they played. Is Arizona going to be able to recapture the magic that they had? So I'm going to say that that, you know, that, that NFC West is not quite as good as what I see in the NFC North with an ascending Vikings team, a good Lions team, you know, and a Bears team that's always tough, and I think John Fox will do a great job there. So that's why I give Seattle a slight edge.
All right, Jeff, I'm delving into the box of tricks one last time to finish off the state of the franchise. Buried beneath a Vikings, who is that? It's a Vikings jersey, a Raiders sweatshirt. I found a Rob Gronkowski Patriots jersey. The Patriots are our defending Super Bowl champions, beating the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. They went 12-4, won the AFC East, and then won it all. A fourth Super Bowl for Tom Brady. But they have lost Darrelle Revis, and they lost Brandon Browner in the off-season. They lost Vince Wilfork, an emotional leader. They lost Shane Vereen, who had, what was it, 10 or 11 catches in that Super Bowl. So let's start with the Patriots then. Broad brush, are they still a contender for you? I guess it depends what happens with that Brady punishment.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talk about, you know, if you throw this into the boxing world, right, and they always talk about to beat the champion, you got to knock him out, right? Well, you're not going to outpoint the champion. I think the same is true in the AFC East. And I think Miami, I think Buffalo, and I think the Jets, frankly, have all done a tremendous job this offseason of narrowing the gap between themselves and the Patriots. And the Patriots, frankly, have come back to the other teams. The biggest thing to me when you talk about all of those losses, Neil, is will the four-game suspension for Brady hold up?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Because if you've got Jimmy Garoppolo for four games or it's just one game, then this could make a difference. I guess what we're doing here, Jeff, is what we do so often with these Patriots, though, is we sort of arm and awe and we wonder how they're going to do, and they've been incredibly consistent, haven't they? And I guess, again, that goes back to is that that's good coaching, that's good leadership, and having a quarterback who you know can get the job done.
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I think it obviously is a quarterback because it all, and we've been through this, you know, ad nauseum, if you will, about the quarterback position. But, you know, you can talk about Drew Bledsoe and then the you know, ascension of, you know, Tom Brady to the throne. And now, you know, very soon they're going to have to change the guard. And it might be this is the thing that, you know, for Tom Brady, it was, I think, a lacerated kidney to Drew Bledsoe. And for Jimmy Garoppolo, it may be this suspension that gives him his opportunity to show that he's ready to be the guy in New England. I don't think, frankly, he's that guy, but we will see. And, you know, I'm certain that, you know, I've listened to Rex a bunch this offseason talk about, you think he is not going to have his knife sharpened when they get to week two of the season?
Oh,
it's going to be a bloodbath.
I think we probably don't need to. I think, Jeff, we can sort of not skip over, but everyone knows the value of Julian Edelman, of Rob Gronkowski, of Tom Brady. You know, we'd only be repeating what people already know, so we're not going to touch on that too much. But how much of a factor do you think LeGarrette Blount will be? Because he was a late season signing, and they did still have that ability, the Patriots, if you sort of set up to defend the pass, then they were happy to hand the ball off and run all day long. And if you set up to defend the run, then they'd spread you out and they'd throw all day long. So they had that ability, sort of, especially in the second half of the season. Do you think LeGarrette Blount, who's only ever sort of been a fits and starts kind of player for them, do you think he becomes a season-long franchise back?
You know, that's a jury's out kind of thing to me because, you know, here's the history of that guy, right? He's never been a guy who can put two great seasons together, right? I mean, he has a great junior year at Oregon. Then he goes into his senior year, gets suspended because of the incident in Boise State where he punches a Boise State kid after the game. He comes into the NFL, looks like he's going to be a guy. Then he goes to Pittsburgh and falls out of favor. Then he comes back. what you want to see out of him is consistency. Now, let's be honest about the Patriots. As good as Brady is, as good as Edelman is, as good as Gronkowski is, as good as all of the players, Branch and Moss and all the guys that they've had in the past, they are their best when they have the ability to run the football. Mm. And for them to run the football, he is, you know, you talk about blunt force trauma. He gives them that physical edge at running back that when they're really, really good, you know, they have the ability to run the ball.
Jeff, I'm just going to, while we're sticking with the Patriots offense, I'm going to drag this question out of the mailbag from Peter Joy, who says, would Tom Brady automatically regain the starter spot if Jimmy Garoppolo went 4-0, a la Brady and Bledsoe? Of course, Bledsoe got hurt in 2001. Brady took that job and has never looked back. What if Jimmy goes 4-0, Jeff? Is this still Tom's job?
No, again, I can't answer for Coach Belichick, but let me just tell you this. If I'm the head coach there, Jimmy Garoppolo will get 4-0, throw for 4,000 yards, and he ain't going to be the quarterback when 12 gets back behind the center. I'm just telling you that right now. I say, hey, Jimmy, nice job. And I'll talk to you next year.
Yeah, your time will come, Jimmy. Go back and sit over there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Jeff, let me read some names out to you. Logan Ryan, Malcolm Butler, Justin Green, Bradley Fletcher. Those are your cornerbacks for the New England Patriots. It's not Darrell Revis anymore.
You know, it's not. And it's not Brandon Browner. And it's, you know, you're in a division now that you look at what Miami can roll out at you. And you look now at the Jets who, you know, struggled to have big play. You know, and they got Brandon Marshall and they got Eric Decker and they've got a running game and, you know, hopefully the defense will continue to play. And then you go up to Buffalo and there's Sammy Watkins, one of the really explosive young players in the National Football League. And then, you know, you pair in Percy Harvin with him and Charles Clay at tight end and Shady McCoy in the backfield. Well, you're talking about a lot of weapons and, you know, those corners. Let's just take it from this standpoint. When you can run the football, which is, I think, Miami can, and I think the Jets will, and certainly Buffalo will, what does that do? You say, well, we're talking about DBs. Well, the reality of it is, if you can run the football, you got to drop an eighth defender in the box, which means what? You're singled outside, and your corners are now in stress all the time. So if you don't have quality corner play, then you're going to be in trouble because it's going to make it harder for you to play those eight-man fronts and stop the run.
Yeah, and we saw Patriots do that in the Super Bowl, didn't they, Jeff? I know we talked about Chris Matthews having he hit a few over the top, and he did have a good game, and Jermaine Kearse had the sort of circus catch near the end. But for a lot of that game, Revis and Browner, they did a great job of blanketing Seattle's receivers, and I guess Revis has always been one of those who's thrived on that. Put me on an island, leave me out there, you worry about the rest of the defense, and I'll take care of this side of the field. And frankly, with the names that I've just read out, that there's no way they're going to have that.
No, and you know what? Malcolm Butler, we're going to find out whether he's a one-play wonder or whether he's really the real deal. And because he's going to get an awful lot of isolation one-on-one outside.
He's going to get some attention as well from the media. Jeff, this is a to be confirmed, isn't it, if I ask you about whether they're a Super Bowl contender or not?
I think, again, like I said earlier, that as long as you're the champion, somebody's got to knock you out to become the champion. So I just think that organization is so well run and so deep in belief in what they do. And I would not be surprised if I was a fly on the wall in those coaches' offices that somehow, some way that Belichick isn't somehow relishing this challenge of showing the world he can, you know, that he can win, whether Tom Brady's suspended for four games or not.
Another us against them scenario is just how Coach Belichick likes it. Let's get into the mailbag then. Last thing on the Patriots, actually, Jeff, it's a question from Chris Ritchie, who says, how much of an effect will the Patriots and the Brady punishment have on any future punishments handed out by the NFL? I think one thing I would just think on this, Jeff, is I think players around the NFL will need to be aware that not cooperating with investigations is not going to help you get away with it. In fact, I think it's been made quite clear that Brady's punishment is because he failed to cooperate with investigators. So I think that might have an impact.
No question. And I just want to say to Chris Ritchie, first of all, I love your brother Guy's movie Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I thought it was one of the great ones that you've ever done. But the reality of it is, just like the underworld, you got to cooperate with the man. That's just the way it works.
This question from Nathan Hutton, who says, what can we expect to see from the Giants this year? Could it be the playoffs? What will we see from Eli? Jeff, we both really like Odell Beckham Jr. They're going to have Victor Cruz, hopefully back healthy this year. That is going to have a positive impact on Eli Manning, isn't it?
I think so. You know, and Landry's a good young player. You know, and you look at Victor Cruz, and you know, I think they helped themselves in the offensive line in the draft. And you know, here's the thing that people don't get about the Giants, right? The Giants made a complete turnaround in what they were doing offensively, but it was a big change. I mean, it was a big change. What they did offensively, going to more West Coast style offense from what Gilbride had done for all those years in New York. Mm. And, you know, that people don't understand a lot of times about when you make a complete, you know, departure from what you've done, the language is different. The way you call a play is different. The nuances of the structure of the play are different. The reads for the quarterback can be different. Well, that's tremendous amount of change. And then on top of it, you're having a hard time protecting the guy. That's not conducive to playing great offense. So I think that they'll be better in the second year of this offense. What concerns me about the Giants is whether they can play enough defense. You know, Perry Fuel came to the Giants with a great reputation and doing a great job in Buffalo as the defensive coordinator in Buffalo, and went to New York. And they just never had that nastiness that, you know, that we're used to seeing from the Giants.
And Steve Spagnuolo's already said, I haven't got a magic wand. Just because I'm back doesn't mean we're going back to those Super Bowl winning, you know, defensive fronts. I mean, it's a different time. It's a different team. You know, he's got different horses that he's riding.
Well, you know, that's an interesting way to look at it. You can throw that disclaimer out there, because here's the guy, and Spags, you know, is a guy I've known for a long time. He had tremendous success when he was with the Giants and he was blitzing all over the place, and you know, they were winning Super Bowls. Then he goes to New Orleans, same coach, same scheme, and they're the worst defense in the history of the New Orleans Saints, if I remember correctly. Then they were bad, like really bad. Same guy, same structure, same blitzes, same calls, the whole deal. The bottom line is, what was different? There was no Michael Strahan. You know, there was no Pierce. There was no any of those guys. Mm. And so what I think he's saying is, he will be better if we've got the players to be better. Now, again, I'm not sold on that right now.
Right.
Yeah. The Giants are going to have to show me on defense.
Yeah, I definitely think they'll be better on offense, and I think they'll need to score those points. Last question then, Jeff, comes from David Cheeseman, and I think this is a good one because we kind of touched on Sam Bradford with the Eagles in the offseason, but I think there was still a part of both of us that felt we didn't talk about it all that much because we thought Sam Bradford might not stay with the Eagles. We thought he might be a pawn in their draft moves, and he wasn't. And so David's question is, How do you think Sam Bradford will do with the Eagles this season? And he says it's exciting times for Eagles fans. So Chip Kelly does believe in Sam Bradford. I like Sam Bradford when he's healthy, in terms of being a quarterback who, you know, throws a nice pass, and I think he can be a franchise quarterback. Chip Kelly clearly believes in him. I think I did raise this when we spoke before on the podcast. So the one thing I can't picture at all is any of that read option stuff that was in this offense. So I assume with no LeSean McCoy, with no Nick Foles, has that part gone away from this offense now?
Well, you know, when you go back to when Bradford was coming out of Oklahoma, and he was the the guy in the, you know, in terms of quarterbacks at that time. And the things that defined Sam Bradford at Oklahoma were really twofold. Number one, his decision making, and number two, his accuracy with the football. Mm. And what I saw in St. Louis over time, Neil, and this happens sometimes, he got his accuracy beat out of him.
He actually told me that, Jeff. He told me that. He said he admitted that the clock in his head got knocked out of kilter by being under so much pressure, and he said he had to work on it and fix it, but he was quite open about that, and I was surprised that he said it, but it was exactly what you say. It was kind of knocked out of him.
You know, I wish I could take all of our listeners for one day to stand behind the offense during team period and see and hear what the quarterback has to deal with.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, that's just team period. Put it in a game scenario where the speed is even faster, and then they actually can hit you. It's incredible to me that any of these guys can function. And then you take Sam Bradford, who played in a system at Oklahoma with all of those great players at Oklahoma. He rarely got, some days he never got his uniform dirty.
Mm.
But then he goes to St. Louis, and he's getting his, excuse my language, he's getting his, I'm not going to say it.
Sorry, Jeff, we're in a storeroom. You can say it.
He's getting his ass knocked off. And then, you know, you can't, don't tell me that that doesn't affect you.
Yeah.
I mean, it does affect you. Now, Chip's challenge is, how do I get this guy back to what he was when he came out of Oklahoma? And I think the critical thing for him, and this is goes to your point, is I can't expose him to hits, at least early. I've got to make sure that he gets comfortable, and I get the ball out, and I throw a lot of those bubble screens and those now screens and all of that kind of stuff, which lets him get on a roll and get confident and know that every time he throws the football, he's not going to get pounded into the turf. And that's again, when you talk about the Mariotas and you talk about Jameis Winston and you talk about all of these young quarterbacks, the thing that you don't want to see happen to them is you don't want to see them get beat up early in their career, because it can, you know, ask David Carr.
Yeah.
Ask David Carr.
Yeah. Look at Blaine Gabbert, Jeff. Look at Blaine Gabbert in Jacksonville. He's a high draft pick, and it just didn't. He got nervous feet. He got skittish in the pocket. He had, you know, he was looking for pressure that wasn't there, and you know that all came from being under a lot of pressure early on in his career.
And you can go Vinny Testaverde in Tampa, Steve Young in Tampa. They had no chance early in their career. Mm. Now, lucky for both of those guys that they had a chance to, you know, go somewhere where they could kind of play their way back. But, you know, that doesn't always happen. And that's why I really think for these young quarterbacks that came into the league this year, I hope the offensive coordinators are smart in how they use them, and that for the Sam Bradfords of the world, that he has a chance now in Chip's system. And I think Chip is extremely quarterback friendly, and he'll give this kid a chance to, you know, get his mojo back.
Jeff, we're going to have to end it there, because this room's getting hotter than Tom Coughlin after an Eli Manning interception.
I hope your face isn't as red as Coach Coughlin this way.
But I want to get out of it, because over my left shoulder, I've just spotted boxes and boxes of the Nike shoes. So, if you don't hear from me next week, I've done a runner. I've probably set up a market stall somewhere in South London.
Hey, dude, before you leave that place, will you grab the Raiders shirt for me? I'll pick it up when I'm in.
I will. There's plenty of opportunity. They never let me in this room. They'll never actually let me in again after this. So, Jeff, thank you very much. This has been Inside the Huddle, a unique version of Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. From the shores of Hawaii, I'm not jealous at all. Say goodbye, Coach.
From the shores of Hawaii to the closets of London, we're coming at you. Aloha.